This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, January 20th, 2011. I'm Curtis Fox. This week on the program, we're going long.
Poets don't usually admit that they like to watch the Super Bowl, but I actually do like to watch the Super Bowl. The pigs in a blanket, which are a huge part of every Super Bowl gathering, make it into the title and into the poem itself.
It's hard to resist a poem or an appetizer called Pig in a Blanket. And the shameless Super Bowl-loving poet is one Matthew Rohrer. In just a moment, we're going to hear that poem, which doesn't even mention the Super Bowl, weirdly enough. Listening in with us from Atlanta is poet Heather Crystal. Heather, you're familiar with Matthew Rohrer's work. I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about him and what you like about his poetry.
Sure. I think that part of what I love about his poetry is referred to in his talking about loving the Super Bowl, and that he feels very open and lacking guile, I think, lacking pretense, which isn't to say that he isn't smart. I mean, he's a really smart poet. He makes incredible choices in his lines and his language, but they seem to be coming from this place of openness and possibility.
So my next question, of course, to you, do you like the Super Bowl?
Oh, I don't think I've ever watched the Super Bowl.
Really?
No, that's not true. I did once have a Super Bowl party with a bunch of poets, but I don't remember the game at all because we were just hanging out the whole time.
It was just an excuse to have a party.
Yeah.
Well, how do you feel about pigs in a blanket?
I'm a vegetarian.
Oh, okay. So, all right. So we have the Super Bowl, we have pigs in a blanket, two things that you're not very fond of. But what can you tell us about this poem by way of introduction?
Well, I think that this poem, as with many of Rohrer's poems, develops the imagination as it moves along. We sense that the poem is figuring some things out, and we get to witness that, and that's often a very charming mode of thought to follow. And I don't mean to demean it by calling it charming. I think that charm is actually pretty important.
No, I actually do too. I think charm is one of the most underrated qualities of a poet. I find it hard to read poems, no matter how good they are, if they don't have charm.
Yeah.
Let's give it a listen. Here's Matthew Rohrer reading Pig in a Blanket.
I wake up, bound tightly. A warm valerian smell cascades to my palate. I can only move my eyelids and toes. Heat sits impishly on my chest, at my throat, curtains of it brushing against me. Panic creeps out of my armpits. I can only move my eyelids and toes, and this constant fluttering lulls me to sleep. I wake late and move like a bee through the apartment, from station to station, from the blue flame to the shimmering disc, from the stairs to the street, to the grocery store, to the meat aisle, to the cocktail wieners, to make pigs in a blanket, to share them with friends, to sink into bed, to bind myself tightly in blankets, to flutter off into sleep, and then on past sleep, to be carried by admirers across a wooden bridge. Later, I will burn this bridge.
That was Matthew Rohrer reading Pig in a Blanket. So Heather, at the beginning of that poem, the speaker seems to be ill. At least he seems to have a fever of some sort.
Heat sits impishly on my chest, at my throat.
Is that what you, how you read that?
I hadn't read it as a fever per se. I was sort of thinking of it. It's an experience that I haven't had, but I've heard of other people having when you wake up and are unable to move. That your whole body is sort of still asleep. I think that that's kind of interesting for Rohrer because he's often talking about sleep and sleepiness and that space between waking and sleeping. And then there's also, because of the title, Pig in a Blanket, you sort of imagine the speaker as a kind of pig in a blanket.
Yeah, a poet in a blanket, right?
Yeah.
But then he starts moving around, and it appears that he's getting ready for a Super Bowl party.
I wake late and move like a bee through the apartment, from station to station, from the blue flame to the shimmering disc, from the stairs to the street, to the grocery store, to the meat aisle, to the cocktail wieners.
I think I also wouldn't have thought of the Super Bowl.
What would you think if not? He's just moving.
Just a sort of social occasion.
Right.
You know, a gathering of some kind.
Yeah, but the social gathering doesn't seem to take place. He ends up back in bed, and we don't hear anything about a party or anything like that. What do you make of that transition?
Well, I love it. And I think that what's really, really exciting about this poem is that moment when you get this shift. So you have from the stairs to the street to the grocery store to the meat aisle to the cocktail wieners.
To make pigs in a blanket, to share them with friends, to sink into bed, to bind myself tightly in blankets, to flutter off into sleep.
So at first we've got the movement, right?
Right.
We've got the actual movement of the speaker through the apartment, from station to station, which is a great line.
Mm-hmm.
I think that part of what I love about what Rohrer does is that he seems open to the kinds of words that might be able to shine in a poem. So the word "to" doesn't very often get to be the star of the show.
Mm.
No, it's a pretty lowly little word. But in this poem, it becomes glamorous, I think.
That's interesting. To make pigs in a blanket, to share them with friends, to sink into bed, to bind myself tightly. "To" becomes the first beat of a rhythm that carries us to the end of the poem.
Yeah, and you almost don't notice it happening. It's so smooth. And then all of a sudden you realize, like, wait a second, I'm in the space of imagination now. I'm in the space of ideas, of propositions.
And then on past sleep, to be carried by admirers across a wooden bridge. Later, I will burn this bridge.
This is a speaker who's admitting to dreaming of being carried somewhere by admirers.
Right.
That's not something you'd really want to admit about yourself.
That and loving the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I actually asked him, when I recorded him a few weeks ago, I asked him about that last image. And I said, I thought it sounded like a funeral procession. And he said it was something quite different.
My thinking on that was much more dreamlike. He moves on past sleep. And to me, the dreamscape is, for better or for worse, almost identical with Tolkien's Middle Earth. For whatever reason, that is sort of what I imagine, the archaic. So there's a wooden bridge in that dreamscape.
I'm not up on my Tolkien. Are there a lot of wooden bridges in Tolkien?
Well, I figure they're stone. You either have two choices, stone or wood.
Mm-hmm.
And also I think the wood making it impermanent so that it's something you can burn in the last line.
Right.
Which also comes out of several work situations that I had burned several bridges around that time.
So let's hear another poem by Matthew Rohrer. It's called The Amaranth, and this is how he introduced it to me.
This poem comes from having read some things about the amaranth, a sort of a mysterious flower. The first line of the poem is the only definition I found, which is that the amaranth is an imaginary flower that never fades. So I started with that line from the dictionary and then imagined what the amaranth was.
Okay, let's hear it.
The amaranth is an imaginary flower that never fades. The amaranth is blue with black petals. It's yellow with red petals. It's enormous and grows into the shape of a girl's house. The seeds nestle high in the closet where she hid a boy. The boy and his bike flee the girl's parents from the tip of the leaves, green summer light behind the veins. The amaranth is an imaginary flower in the shape of a girl's house, dispensing gin and tonics from its thorns, a succulent. This makes the boy's bike steer off course all summer, following the girl in her marvelous car, the drunken bike. He was a small part of summer. He was summer's tongue.
Heather, here we have another poem of sort of magical transformations. This mysterious flower seems to loom above the poem, and it begs for some sort of symbolic interpretation. What is the amaranth in this poem, symbolically?
Oh, I don't know that I agree that it's symbolic.
Really?
I think that it's an invitation to the imagination.
Uh-huh.
It says that the amaranth is blue with black petals. Wait, no, it's yellow with red petals. This isn't a stable image. It's just a sight of the imagination.
You know, one way I read it, and I realize this is a very limited reading, is the amaranth is a sort of a stand-in for memory. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that the poem definitely engages with memory and its intersections with the imagination. I mean, you can see that reflected in the tense. There's an awful lot of the use of the present tense.
The amaranth is blue with black petals.
But then
the seeds nestle high in the closet where she hid a boy.
So that's a little bit of a switch to the past.
Yeah.
Then we're in the present.
The boy and his bike flee the girl's parents from the tip of the leaves.
But then in that last couplet, you get
he was a small part of summer. He was summer's tongue.
And I think that that suggests we've perhaps been dealing more with memory than the poem has admitted to already.
Mm-hmm. Those are very evocative last lines. Summer's tongue strikes me as both an erotic image as well as an image of the poet, and the tongue suggests kissing, or even as Matthew Rohr told me, something a little bit more erotic even than that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a definite erotic tone to that tongue. And it's also, even apart from its erotic reading, it's just so intimate. I mean, to think of all of the parts of Summer, if you're going to, you know, give Summer a body, all of the things that the boy could have been, but to be its tongue is this interior, warm, intimate space.
Yeah. Okay, Heather, thanks so much.
Thank you. It was great.
Heather Crystal teaches poetry at Emory University, and she's the author of The Difficult Farm. Her second book, The Trees, will be published by Octopus Books this summer. For more on Matthew Rohr, go to our website, poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.